Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Two Norries podcast. I'm your host, James, and I'm joined as always by my good friend, Timmy Long.
Hi, everyone.
Leah punches August today. How's the form?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, lads.
No, we're delighted to have you on. We were just chatting there, and then I said, no, Matt, roll it, because we'd be only repeating ourselves. But you're from Mayfield. You're living on the south side.
Yeah, so I grew up in Mayfield. I moved out to the country for a few years as well. So we lived out in Carrignavar for like 10 years.
Grand spot out there.
Lovely, but I think at the time it was the wrong time to move us. So I was like, you know, finding my feet, me wanting to be out around the place.
What age were you?
Just going into first year.
So you moved to Mayfield?
I moved to Carrignavar.
Oh, you moved to Carrignavar from
Mayfield. Oh, so I went to secondary school in Carrignavar. So I was like isolated. The cows were my neighbours, like, you know, I think our park was all like young families. Great, like obviously for young children, I suppose. But I think when you move, when you're so used to living in a city, built up area, we'd one shop, like there was nothing to do. I was just a bit kind of overwhelmed, I think.
See, Mayfield to Carrignavar is a big upgrade when you're an adult. But when you're 12, it's the last thing you want.
Yeah, we despised it, like, and I mean, I'd run back there now, do you know?
Carrignavar is a nice old spot. No, Mayfield is grand too. I don't want any haters from Mayfield. Mayfield's a grand spot. But when you get older and you're looking for a bit more peace and quiet and get out of the busyness, Carrignavar is only out the road.
Yeah, 10 minutes, like, from Dublin Hill to... Well, home at the time, I suppose.
So did you spend your teenage years out there?
So I actually ended up dropping out of school at 15 and I moved up to my nan's house in Mayfield. I went to Mayfield Training Centre. So I spent like 2 years up there.
That's like an ETB
At the time, it was a FOSS, but it's kind of revamped now. And like, you know, I was probably looking back. I only called up to the lads last week and... how beneficial that was for me at that time when I just didn't realise it, you know.
What kind of stuff were you doing up there?
So I went in and done a fitness course and then I done computers and I went on then to do childcare in College of Com.
You did a lot up there, so?
Yeah, I spent 2 years. I didn't want to leave really because we kind of had it easy, you know. We were well looked after and I suppose, as I said, they were actually great support system. Always someone there to listen to us and I suppose guide us and we were fed and watered, like, do you know, what more could you want somewhere?
Were you natural academically? Was there something that...
No, so I actually, like that now, I think since a young age, I'd always be like having to get the homework done. I'd, you know, put the head down. I think secondary school, I really started to struggle. I actually got diagnosed with ADHD May this year.
Where?
So looking back now, there was a lot of things that actually make sense now. I'd find it very hard to concentrate and, you know, reading things, processing information, just takes me that bit longer, you know. But obviously now, I think obviously girls mask ADHD, like it's in the family. My own son is waiting to be assessed at the moment and I was looking at him, I was like, he's just a mini version of me. So.
And you went into College of Com as well?
I went to College of Com then when I was just turned 18.
What year was that?
So I actually can't even think now.
Was everything in your life going smoothly at that stage?
Well, I suppose
was
like...
Was drinking, drugs and stuff a part of your life?
Like when I was young, I was wild. But I think I was always... I always had that, what's the word? Streak.
Rebellious streak.
I was like...
A rebel.
Rebel, but like I would have been around the place. We drank every weekend, like, you know, we were out doing whatever, like, and... it's probably one of the best times looking back. You know, we used to have great times. We swapped the fields, like, and there was no trouble as such. But I think I always had that thing about me. If I felt uncomfortable, I'm gone. I have that, like, a sixth sense. So I was never kind of in trouble. just happy-go-lucky, like just live my best life kind of a thing.
No, you made a good point there, or you said something that was interesting, right? That, you know, looking back, drinking and whatever, good days. There was somebody commented on one of our videos the other day on YouTube, and it got me thinking. He said, we were talking about, you know, the good old days, back in the day, teenagers, drinking, taking ecstasy is what he was talking about. He was saying, I used to look back in those days and think, you know, they were some of the best days in my life, he says. But as I got older, I realised that in the most important years of my development, I was throwing loads of drugs down my body, which hampered his development, you know. And I think about back, like when you're 15, 16, 17, 18, your brain, your body is maturing. But when you're taking all those drugs, it has to have a detrimental impact on the development, you know, in compared to somebody that went through those years without all those drugs, you know?
Yeah, like I would have done drugs and things. Like I'd try anything. I was mad as a hatter, I'd say, but you know, like that.
But it's normal for a teen.
Yeah, like you know? Try things. Like I would have been drinking young, but like that, my parents were actually open to leave me drink. So then I could always go home. I wasn't out pretending I was staying in a friend's house.
Yeah.
I wasn't hiding it. So I literally, I knew I had control. My mum had control.
Yeah.
So like they just collect me.
Yeah.
So I go for fjords and I go home. Obviously, got a bit older then, like, it probably, you know, I used to be inside town Mangans, I'd say, about 16, like.
Yeah. It sounds like the relationship you had with your parents, that sounds like it was actually good.
Yeah, like, I came from, like, I suppose, a normal working class family, you know, and like that, like, I suppose, we had everything we kind of needed, I suppose, you know. But, like, I think as I'm growing older, you know, I think I look at things and be like, that could have been different. And I always felt, especially now because I went to FOSS, you know, some people might have had it harder than me. But then I used to be like, I can't feel that way because they had less than me. And then I'm like, I've realised now what I felt is what I only know.
Mm.
So you kind of just accept, you know, if you felt a certain way about something.
Yeah,
so like that gets me to the point, like my weight loss journey. So like
what weight did you lose?
So I weighed over 22 stone once upon a time, and I'm 10 and a half now.
You lost half your body.
Yeah, weight. 12 stone, like.
So bring us back a little bit back then and fast. Was there an issue with mental health or overeating at this stage?
My weight started from a young age. So my first memory of my weight was communion. Inside Roach stores trying to get my communion dress, and I couldn't find a dress that fitted me. I suppose back then it was kind of, you know, not like they used to cater for, you know, heavier children or whatever. So like, you know, all the kind of fancy puffy dresses, and obviously my mum was trying to be nice about things. And I actually remember to this day, like, she's got me a nice plain silk kind of a dress, but I wanted the big dress, which I obviously couldn't because I would have, well, I could have, I suppose, but they didn't fit me anyway. So that was the first thing that I remember, like, with the weight. And, like, we were given proper food, you know. We always had, like, proper dinners. I was eating shit, but I was just always overeating. And I just couldn't control it. I basically felt like a wheelie bin, like, just open it and keep filling it, and I just keep going.
Was there a lot of guilt and shame?
Yeah, so it was like a vicious cycle, like eating. And I like from a young age, around fifth class, like I was asking my mum, like I didn't want to be this way and I wanted help. So my mum went to the GP and I was referred to dietitians, like very young. I was put on milkshake diets, like through the chemist in Ballyvlan. I never forget it. I was going down and get weighed. And I used to be drinking these meat replacements. But sure, like my mum, they weren't taught about nutrition. Like, you know, calories in, calories out. You know, I think we're all way more aware of what we consume these days. So, like, she was trying her best. She was, like, trying giving her potatoes, poppies, veg, and sliced pan.
Just a mountain of them.
Yeah, and eating bread on top of it with your dinner, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And my mum used to actually work night shifts, like, evenings. So my brother, older brother's minding us. So, like, I used to probably have my dinner and probably eat on it because no one was kind of watching me. Do you know that kind of way? I had a free, like,
what height are you?
5 foot.
What's your calorie intake at the moment to maintain what you have?
So I got a gastric bypass. So, like,
yeah, talk about it.
So I suppose my weight started very young and then got worse and worse. When I went to FOSS then in Mayfield, I'd done the fitness course, so I did trim up because we're training every day.
Did you get a lot of awareness around
I did
eating and stuff?
I did, like, and you know, but it was like something I still couldn't control.
Yeah.
So like that, I went, end up going to college cam, dropped out after 3 months, went to Australia for a year. Had a hoolie over there.
Way better than the college.
Do you know what? Now I just needed out. There was a lot of things kind of just going on, and like my mental health was obviously suffering, but it was obviously all down to my weight, and I just wasn't aware of anything back then. You know, I just wanted out. My dad actually went to Australia and I followed him over. So I lived there for a year, but then realised, I'm like, I can't survive over here. I need to come home and educate myself, you know, to get a proper job that I can live comfortably. So I ended up getting pregnant a year after I was home. Just when I finished the childcare course, I actually came home, went back to college, finished the childcare course, but ended up getting pregnant. And I didn't find out I was pregnant until I was 26 weeks. So like that, people say, how did you know? And I genuinely did not know. All my tests were negative. I actually had an ultrasound on my ovaries in the Mercy Hospital when I was 3 weeks pregnant, because they thought I had like cysts because my menstrual cycle was after going every second month. So, you know, my weight was probably affecting that, they were saying. They just said they'll check.
What weight were you at this stage?
About 17 stone was my norm. Yeah. Kind of like late teens, early 20s. That's where I'd hover. Do you know, I could maintain that up and down a few pounds. So I was like, sure, well, I'm not pregnant. My period was just gone. So I was like, I don't know what's after happening. And in the end, anyway, when I went back to my GP, because I was like, I thought I had a hernia or something. I just didn't feel right. I had all the symptoms going anyway in the meantime. Mm. But sure, if someone tells you you're not and the tests were negative, you know. I was like, sure, what? And then I went to the GP. I'll never forget it. It was like a Friday evening, 6 o'clock, the day of my mum's birthday. And she's like, Leah, we'll just do another test. And she done it. And it was like very faint line. I was like, sorry. So got out. They checked like the heartbeat. Mm. And it was boom, boom, boom. She was like, Leah, you're anything from 20 to 30 weeks. I nearly went off in a weakness.
So how many weeks is a full term?
40. So I literally was like, nah. I went straight to my nan's because she lived around the corner from my doctor's. Told her straight away. She was just looking at me and I was going, what? But look, the baby.
Do you know, like women are pregnant, they obviously put on a bit of weight, but.
Like nothing, nothing, nothing at all. The next day, the bump came out. Yeah. I'm not exaggerating. It like literally, that just goes to show how much our bodies protect.
Yeah.
Like I was drinking and everything. Like I was more concerned about that, you know, because I had to go back. I went to the hospital the following week and it was 27 weeks. They done like full in-depth, you know, scans and the whole lot. And saying like everything was fine. I did have gestational diabetes. Which I was monitoring, and I was brought into hospital 39 plus one, so a week kind of early just because I was diabetic, they don't leave you go over. No. So I was brought in on a Wednesday, and you know, didn't know what I was expecting.
Mm.
Here we go. So
me, Leah?
I was 22. So we went in and I literally was there anyway. When they induce you, they give you like rounds of gel. So I think I got 2 or 3 rounds of that. Nothing was happening. Then Thursday, they broke my waters at 3 o'clock. And I was still there Friday morning. So it was 19 hours my waters broke. And only 1 centimetre, which I should have been C-sectioned hours before. So that was grand. I didn't know. I didn't know. I was just going along and everyone to any like prenatal classes or, you know, so I wasn't aware, like it wasn't normal. Actually, my midwife, I went home the night before, came back and she's like, why are you still here? There was just emergency cases coming in front of me and, you know, everything was fine with me. So they kind of just left me there basically. So that was grand. Emergency C-section. The child ended up in neonatal that evening. And so his blood sugars are after dropping. And then I was just broke up. That's the only, I can't describe. I didn't know how I was supposed to feel. And it's actually mad because I'm like, you know, if you leave a hospital now, they tell you, if you feel this way or that way, come back in there. I couldn't even put my slippers on. I couldn't even get out of the bed. I was in so much pain. And I remember mom saying, that's not normal. Like, you're leaving her go like that now. And they're like, no, she's fine. So I went home on a Monday. Yeah, it was a Monday, I think. So Friday, Saturday. Monday, yeah. And I went to my own GP on the Wednesday because I was just feeling very unwell and in severe pain, like in the C-section wound. And then Thursday, I was getting worse. So my mum brought me back into the hospital Thursday evening, and basically I was rushed down to the high dependency unit and the maternity ward. They didn't know what was wrong. They thought maybe blood clot. So the team were working like to see what was going on, bloods, the whole lot. And basically they told me I had sepsis. So I was transferred to ICU a week after my son was born. So like that, I was very unwell at the time. So I didn't know what. I was just going with the flow, obviously. So they'd wait. There's only 10 beds in the CUH. Like, so they'd wait to move someone out with me in, basically. So I went into ICU. I remember everything. It was just absolutely horrendous. I don't know, it was because I was on overdrive and I was like mother mode kicking in. I should be at home with my baby. But like I had to, they put me into an induced coma.
It was very dangerous, sepsis, like it's potentially fatal.
So like if I didn't go in, I would have been found dead, they taught me. So my lungs are failing. I was in an induced coma. I had a full ventilator. So they actually put me into like a private room then. I think there's 3 or 4 private rooms up in the ICU because I just wasn't switching off. They were like giving me like all medication obviously to work, but then they figured out what infection I had, like I'd say about 10 hours later. So I had an infection called Pseudomonas. So they had to like withdraw the antibiotic that was in me to put in a different one to fight the infection. And I was hallucinating. I actually felt like my bed was like in a Transformers. I was seeing doctors kicking babies around the hospital, rats. I was full blown
hallucinating.
And I was trying to vomit then, but I was getting fed through
How long made like that?
I was a week in intensive care and I spent a further 3 weeks in hospital.
How old the baby?
So he was at home.
What you call him?
Shay. It is. I'm like, at the start I was like calling the baby for like a year. I was like, I couldn't. When you have a child like that, it's like, how'd you give him a name? It's like, I don't know.
The name has to fit him, don't it?
Yeah, it's pretty like the baby. So yeah, I spent 4 weeks in hospital and then when I came home, shit hit the fan. So I suffered severe postnatal depression, severe PTSD from being in intensive care. And it was very, very traumatic. Like, so I actually gained 6 stone in 10 months after that. I locked myself away. I used to only leave like to go out to get nappies and the bare few bits and going out drinking on a week.
Where were you living at this stage then?
At home.
At home.
Yeah. No, Mayfield. Yeah. Right. So I used to only go out like, you know, to go shopping and just out drinking basically once a week just to get out. But then I was really hit rock bottom my weight. I was over 22 stone.
Can I ask you what kind, like, can you give us, like, what a typical day of eating is like to put, for somebody's, your height, put on that much weight?
I don't know. Was it down to, like, all medication at the time? Because I actually, when I think of it is a lot to, but, like, see, that's how bad I fluctuate. I could lose 3 stone and have it back on in a month or 6 weeks. So that's obviously the amount of overeating I was doing. But like that, I remember...
Just overeating, is it a continuous stroke today?
Yeah, not really binging. Like I probably used binge, clearly. Yeah. But it was more so just overeating constantly. Like I remember like my breakfast, I'd get up, I could just have like 6 slices of toast with a cup of tea.
Yeah.
6, like. Do you know, I remember my favourite thing is I love to say pita breads. Do you know, the large pita pockets? Mm-hmm. Tuna, mayonnaise, lettuce, egg. But I'd have 2 large ones, 2 cans of tuna and 2 packs of potatoes.
Breakfast.
Well, for say lunch. For but lunch, I'm like, that's double. Yeah. That's double portion. Like, you know, and then I had a fair sweet tooth, still do. And then just at night time, then I was always going to be getting takeaways and things. Mm-hmm. It was like my body, it was a vicious cycle. I was craving the food because I wanted it if it made me feel good.
In that moment,
it made me feel like, oh, it just, I said, I know what it done to me. It's like a drug.
Tell me this. Was there a lot of purging as well when all this?
No, I never.
Was it always retained, the food?
Always retain.
What about the mental aspect of it? Did you
like that?
The purge? Did you?
Not. I'd be so full. Yeah. I'd probably feel like getting the gawks, but I never actually got sick.
There was no mental side of you telling it. Like, no way, people would believe me. Yeah. They'll eat and they'll overeat and then they'll go to the toilet and they make themselves sick.
Yeah, no, never like that. But like mentally then to myself, I'm living my best life. Like, I actually was only thinking the other day, me and my friend who's get the big Don and Dantello's. Like, that's 22 inch or something. Mm. I'd eat half that.
Yeah. Mm.
That's how, like, that's a lot. Like, that
6,000 or 7,000 calories, I'd say, in that thing.
That's a lot of food, like, for one sitting. Like, so I was able to, like, eat a lot. So
I did. Some people can overeat, but not eat that much physical food. You know what I mean? Like, if for example, overeating is like consuming more calories than you need. Mm. Like, it doesn't mean like sitting down eating 24 hours of the day. So, like, if your takes 2,500 calories to maintain my weight,
yeah.
If I eat 3,500, I'm after overeating. But you could easily, like, if you had a McDonald's, you had a half a Big Don, or you had a King Dino burger, and you're after having a fry for your breakfast, next you're having biscuits, which you could have 5,000 or 6,000 calories there. Easy.
Easy. And that's exactly what I was. And I was eating all the wrong things, you know, so I wasn't kind of aware. And I suppose, obviously, like, after having my son, like, that's the biggest thing. Like, I was actually kind of on my own. Like, there was no support from the hospital. Like, I'm actually like involved now with, there's a new charity, Irish Sepsis Foundation.
There are not many.
Yeah.
We launched it. You know that?
Oh, did you? Oops,
did you?
So I was on the news the other day because James kind of reached out to me, and I'm like, do you know what? Like, how beneficial that would have been to me in that moment, because going through sepsis, I had an open wound for 6 months. And, like, that could have helped me in that aspect, you know, with just kind of learning off other people and people that are just going through it or past it. I think, like, these kind of groups are very beneficial for people going through things, you know. And, like, social media, there's good, like, positive things for social media for support like that.
Yeah.
This podcast will be released in relation to the sepsis, because it's sepsis month.
Mm.
So we released it as an... They have to raise awareness about sepsis.
Yeah.
This for this month.
Yeah.
So how did the sepsis recovery, like, how long did it take it to get yourself back physically healthy?
So, like, that, like, going through the process, like, it was actually all a blur. Looking back, I'm like, I don't remember much. Like, I do, like, I was traumatized, like, but my wound was on for 6 months. Like, I probably wasn't back to myself. Like, I think I was still going to the hospital for a year. And I think after the 12 months, I was up to 6 stone. So I was obviously dealing with it still, you know. And I was like, right, I need to get my shit together. You know, I'm back to Slim World then. I was like, tried to tackle the weight, because that was the biggest consequences that I had to deal with, was the weight gain from having sepsis, I suppose, and the postnatal depression. It was my comfort. And I suppose having that addiction towards food from years, that's what made me feel good. So that's exactly what I done. So I ended up reaching out to my GP when my son was 2.5. So I was after losing 3 stone twice between when he was 1 and 2.5. So I lost 6 stone, you could say, in a year and a half, but gained it back.
Yeah.
And I just said, look, my GP was actually after retiring when my son was 1. So I'd never really went to the doctor. So I felt like I was like an alien up there, you know. I just didn't feel the support. But look, I reached out and I said, I'm just fed up. I can't live like this anymore. I said, my whole life battling my weight, you know, and now I'm worse than I ever was after going through a traumatic experience. And I was like, I can't do it. So they referred me to Loughlin's Town up in Dublin, the weight management clinic. I waited 2 years for an appointment. So I went there March 2019, yeah. And I was very overwhelmed when I went up there, because I was 27 at the time. And yeah, I was 27 at the time. And I was like, just kind of looking around me, you know, and there was all these extra large chairs, extra large door frames. And like people that would have been kind of a lot heavier than me, but also a lot older, you know. And my friend actually came up with me, and she was kind of a bit like, oh, it was just, you know, this girl never strode her away, but she was kind of like, I didn't know what to say to her. I was like, what did you think of that? She goes, I don't know. And I kind of went away from it, and I was like, I don't need this. I said to myself, I don't need it. So I was there, I was like back on the bandwagon, try to lose weight again. And then it was summer, so it was like 4 months later. And I was working in a preschool in Blackpool at the time, and it was finished for the summer. And I remember just sitting there, and it was a lovely day now. And I was just sitting on the couch, and I was sweating, just sitting, dripping. And I just thought to myself, first of all, I should be down the beach or at the playground with my son. but I'm actually sitting here, no quality of life, can't actually move because the heat is killing me. Everything was a struggle at that stage, you know. Could barely put on my shoes, could barely tie my laces. You know, it was just cleaning the house is even a workout. And I'd no life, like I wasn't able to walk far. I actually went to London, Miami. I was living in London for a while, and like we went over to like the Shrek and Legoland, all them. And my mum, she only told me this afterwards, like when I did start losing the weight, but like she remembered my listen to my breathing, even just walking, a normal thing that, you know, you take for granted, I suppose. And it was just a struggle. So,
I suppose, like, just outside of all that, your relationships, you know, a relationship with a man, you know, having sex, all these.
Yeah, it's just.
They all stop, like, because of things like this as well.
And as well, because of, like, the post-traumatic stress, like, everything was just fucked, if you ask me. So I ended up researching surgery abroad then in that summer because they told me waiting 6 to 8 years for weight loss surgery in Ireland. And I was like, sure, I could be dead by then. So I started researching abroad, found a clinic, and was going to wait till like April the following year because I was like trying to get money together.
Well,
in Lithuania. So I ended up getting the money together. So I went sooner rather than later.
Is it expensive?
So the surgery was 6,150. And then you pay for your flights and accommodation. But I actually got reimbursed the money off the HSE through cross-border directive. Someone only mentioned this to me when I was a year and a half post-op. So I'll get to that in a few minutes.
Great.
So like I was, you know, I went abroad for my surgery. I was absolutely shitting it. Me and my mum were like, where are we going? You know, but ended up being absolutely amazing, you know. Obviously coming home, then there's no support. My GPs weren't a bit supportive of me going abroad.
Something I was going to ask you before you continue, do you know the psychological aspect of why you were actually putting on so much weight? Did you ever sit down with a therapist or anything like that and talk about why you couldn't stop eating or go to any Overeaters Anonymous meetings or anything like that, just to try to understand what was going on for you?
Yeah, so like I had counselling after Shay was born, so I did go to a few, but like basically your one said to me, I think you're over it. And I was like, that's grand, but like that, I think I was like building up a wall. And now I've 4 years post-op, so there was a lot of self-development and looking into my life and why I might have been a certain way and like that. Like nothing traumatic happened to me growing up, but there was just the, I suppose, the emotional aspect. My mom used to be working the evenings. I was like, was it something to do because my mom wasn't at home? And, you know, I'd be trying to think of why. But I got diagnosed with the ADHD, and there's actually like a proven link with obesity in women and ADHD. So it's like a chemical imbalance with the overeating. So I was like, that makes sense, because I'm like, there's nothing. Obviously, after having my son, yeah, there was a reason, do you know? But other than that, like,
yeah,
it's nearly my genetics. Like,
there's a correlation with addiction with the ADHD across the board.
Yeah, like I've OCD. Shopping addiction, food.
You can get the drug addiction.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Well.
I know.
You know,
stay away from the drugs, aren't you?
But like that, yeah, there's definitely.
You have addictive tendencies.
Yeah, definitely.
What was it like? Well, what was the procedure like? Like, is it very invasive? Is it very sore? Or how does it work?
So, it's keyhole surgery. I was in pain for about 3 weeks. I remember I had an awful, like, felt like a stitch under here. But this was like, they move, I'm not going to say it because I'll probably get it wrong. They move some organ here anyway to get access. So it just like feels like a bad stitch. It's probably one of the worst surgeries I recovered from, being honest. Because I've had lots of skin removal surgeries since then. I'll talk about it in a few minutes.
I know.
So I suppose going through the process of the weight loss surgery.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Weight loss surgery is obviously a very popular thing, you would say, these days.
The moment it is, yeah.
And
with the turkey teeth, it's up there,
And you know what? I think my Instagram page, when I started it, I remember reaching out for support. I wasn't getting it off my GPs. There was no one to help me. I obviously went abroad. There was actually no one that I could talk to. I was talking to Americans and they're very far-fetched and we have completely different types of foods.
Yeah.
And I couldn't really relate to them. So I was like, and that's why I started my Instagram page, because I was like, I just document it and see how I go. And it's nearly a diary that I kind of have to show up and kind of egged me on a bit. So going through the process, it is hard. So I had my surgery October 2019 and then we went into the pandemic March 2019. So probably one of the best times for me, because I was actually at home. Everything was shut. But I was feeding the whole house then, so I still had the tendency to be cooking and a feeder, I'd call myself,
You were doing what your mum? Your mum did, that's what you
were. Yeah, my mum was actually in England, so feeder, still love doing all that, cooking and, giving people food, because I was I couldn't eat it.
Are you a good cook?
Yeah.
From the surgery, it was a band, is it?
A bypass, so...
What does it actually do? Does it stop me from eating too much food? Does it shrink your appetite?
Yeah, so your esophagus basically bypasses your stomach, so you have a little pouch. So it's like a newborn baby, basically.
So do they implant that pouch in your belly?
No, so it's actually surgically, so they rerouted my tummy, basically. So they made a new stomach, so it's small.
Yeah.
So I was on liquids for 4 weeks, and you have to build up your tolerance. But I'm now obviously 4 years and I can eat everything again. So it does stretch. But then obviously you won't want to be surviving on what you're surviving after surgery, because I was malnourished, I would say now, because I wasn't getting enough food into me. I lost 9 stone in 10 months. And then the last kind of stone, I was 20 stone, 5 pounds the day of surgery. So 10 stone since surgery. I was after losing a stone and a half myself before the surgery. But that surgery isn't a quick fix. You have to change your whole life. I went away and done a PT course. I think you're actually doing it now.
I didn't go ahead.
Really. Oh, didn't you?
No, but I might do it in January.
But I done that. But yeah. Do you know what? Now I wasn't too sure, what kind of line, would I go into PT, or was it just... Just for myself. Coming out of the pandemic, I was like, sure, I might as well do it. I'm after doing loads of courses.
I am.
But done that and loved it. But I was I really could see then the enjoyment of, exercise. So I've completely changed my whole life around, really. And it's not just physically, it's mentally and emotionally. So
I remember the first time I come across you, I was on Instagram. And I seen you very brave to put yourself up on Instagram like that when you're underwear. But I could see a lot of the excess skin. What's it like when you lose so much weight in such a short period of time? And then, when you're left with the skin, is that that's another job that needs to be done, another task?
It is, I'm very obviously fortunate and lucky that I was able to get it done, because not everyone can afford these things. But that I had to go back abroad for my surgeries. So I went back for another 3 rounds of surgeries.
Lithuania.
Yeah. So I'm after going there every year for the last 4 years.
Yeah. It was working. Why not?
So I had... I'd loose skin everywhere. So I had an FDL 360 tummy tuck. So basically it's like a lower body lift and a tummy tuck. I then went back for... And I had my arms done. So I'm actually cut.
So do you know if you have excess skin? Do they cut away the skin and stitch the...
Yeah, so they'll stitch it all.
Your arms actually look perfect. They look great, considering somebody who's 28, 22 stone.
They removed most of it, like, so I had, like, a breast lift, an armpit lift.
So it was sore, was it?
Do you know what now? I'd actually go... I do recover very well, but also it's a mental aspect. Like, you know, you are laid out for a few weeks, but I think I'm in a good place. So, like, if I can give my body what it needs, you know, you have to ride the wave, like...
Do you think you smiled as much as you did back then than you do today?
Well, I am definitely happier, but I was always outgoing and, you know, my weight, like, didn't hold me back.
Mm.
But it had an awful impact, I suppose. And, like, actually, one of the women there that I used to be in touch with, youth community worker, I actually messaged her the other day because I'm starting UCC today.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah. So, like, I actually messaged her. She messaged me back and she said, Leah, you came to me in 2017. So I actually remember it. And, like, she was kind of, like, telling me, in a nice way, you're not ready, like, you know. But it was just, like, she obviously, and it was actually after speaking to her in the January that I actually reached out to my GP in February. So whatever she said to me, obviously clicked something in my head. And like obviously going through the whole process now, I'm 4 years post-op next month from my weight loss surgery, but it's just gone from strength to strength. But I'm also doing the work, like, you know, I'm very aware of, like, just everything, you know.
Do you know when you have the surgery and but you have a whole lifetime of eating habits, like, how did that work? Like, were you eating and you were getting full? Were you going back to the fridge because of habit? You're going back to the fridge, the cupboard, and then you realise, no, you're not, can't eat that, or I don't want to eat it. Like, how does that work?
Like, the first few months were horrendous, and my older brother would be fairly healthy, like, and I remember he got loonies, I'm sure, 3 times in the 1 week when I first came home. I was like, you don't even eat it. You don't even eat it, and you're actually eating it in front of me. Even though I was crying because I couldn't eat.
Yeah.
And it was hard, but like that, I changed GP after a year and a half. I moved GP. I found an amazing doctor. And actually, they're all lovely in the surgery because she's after having 2 babies in the last 2 years. So I actually didn't get to see her half the time. But I just changed everything. And it's just after changing my whole world. So obviously, my weight just held me back in all aspects.
Yeah.
You know, and like leaving school so young, just after getting this fire in me that I just want to push. Like, the biggest thing for me now is security for the future. So, like, right, here I am, starting UCC. Like, I thought UCC was for the others. Never in my life would I think I'd be, you know, a student at 31 years of age. I'm 32 now, November. But obviously, I had to take the scenic route because now it's like, looking back, I genuinely believe that everything happened for a reason. Because if that didn't happen after I had my son, I think I would have just carried on living the way I was living. Miserable, basically. So now I'm just like, so grateful, you know, for everything. And I think the biggest thing, even, you know, being on, as I share my journey online, and like anyone else, you know, looking online, Instagram can be the biggest, like, killer to your own ego, I suppose, and your own...
That's what I was going to ask you next.
Like, you have to be very careful what you, I suppose, consume, what you're watching, you know. I loved Instagram at the start because it was like during the pandemic, I had time to help people, and I try reply to everyone, but it's just not possible. Like, for me now, I'm like taking a big step back from like social media because I obviously have other priorities, you know,
college work.
And like, you'd be scrolling for hours, you know, but comparison, like comparing yourself to others, you know.
What about the dark side of Instagram? where you have these troll pages and people that are just not well in themselves and they want to upset you. How do you deal with stuff like that? Or is it something you ever got?
Like, I do get, like, I probably can count in my hands, like, how many messages I got in the last 4 years. Like, I actually don't give a fuck. Like, obviously, it gets to me. And it's like, the biggest thing, though, I don't show, like, my son, I stop showing, like, very early, because I'm like, I'm glad I got the awareness very early days. And it's, look, I don't mind people sharing, and I obviously show everything. And I'm kind of like, oh, but I'm like, that's part of my journey. It's not that it's just something, you know, that can help others. But for me, it's like you're one person, but you have your family, your friends. Yeah. Like, my mom gets spotted now, you know, they like know who she is. And I just find, even for my child, I'm like, I don't want to even put him out there.
Because it's your decision.
Because it's my decision. And then years coming for my child. Yeah. Like, why did you put me on that and affect his whole mental health then, going, you know, I'm just like,
but you know, you're on about going to UCC 31. 30s is a good age to be a social worker, because if you're going into social work, let's say if you did your degree and you were qualified at 25 or 26 and then you're going in and you're the social worker for this young man that's 25 or 26, it can be difficult.
Yeah.
But when you're in your 30s, you're a bit mature, a bit more life experience, you have a bit more credibility with the service user or client.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They're not looking at, sure, what do they know? She's only out of college, 24 years of age. Whereas by the time you finish now, you'll be 35. I think that's a good age.
I'll be 36. Yeah. And if I stay on longer to do masters, I'll be nearly 40. I'd say, come out of UCC.
You know what you have, Leah? You have a lifetime of experience, okay? So becoming a social worker might be something that you mightn't even go on to do.
Yeah.
You might end up working in an area where you're helping people with obesity. You know, it might be, we never know.
Or a health social worker in the hospital.
But that's like, exactly. That's half my ADHD, like, because I actually be, I could see myself doing anything. I could be a chef, I could be anything. But like, I think this degree is only a stepping stone not only is going to secure my future and be able to stand on my own 2 feet and be comfortable in life, you know, regardless of Instagram or anything, you know. Yeah. Like, I actually don't even kind of work with anyone really on Instagram as of yet. I'm like, I'm waiting for the day that I get, you know, what I want from, you know, Instagram and things. Like, that's only a part of it.
Yeah. Can I get your opinion on the wider issue of medical tourism and your opinion on, like, you went to Lithuania, but you were at your wit's end after years of struggles.
And no support here.
Yeah, but do you think that there's people like that, but then there's also people look at it, they don't want to do the nutrition, the fitness, the personal development. They go straight for the gastric band. Or, you know, do you think that there is people like that, and would you have any kind of warnings or concerns about that type of industry?
100%. Like, I think, obviously, 4 years now nearly, I'm kind of very aware and wary of what I kind of post online, because I know when I was at my wit's end, I would have done anything to change. Sure, my pictures are being used all over online for like weight loss injections and tablets and things. So I can understand when someone...
Without your consent.
Yeah. Constant. I can't do anything about it. But it's like, when people are so bad and want change, but like, you're not seeing the other side of it, that you actually have to put in the work. And like, to be fair, I don't know what I was going into. You know, I didn't. But I suppose as I was going through it, I was getting the courage and the strength. Something just became alive, as I said, and I just kept pushing through it. But I've seen people that went, and like, as well, like, comparison, you know, I could have a twin sister there and we could go and do the exact same thing, but she might only lose 5 stone, I could lose 12. Yeah. You might never reach goal, you might reach goal. Mm. Do you know? So you can't ever compare, and like that, like online, oh, sure, look, she looks great. But what's she doing besides that, besides the picture? Mm. So like, I'd tell anyone, I wouldn't be rushing into it. I definitely, like, there's loads of support groups now. Like, there's Overeating Anonymous. There's, like, if you Google anything, I suppose, the GP.
Your own channel is a good resource for people.
Yeah, and there's actually, I think, the Weight Management are actually rolling out new programmes throughout the country now. So I think there's actually, should be services available, like, in Cork as well.
Yeah. You mentioned something a while ago about getting reimbursed by the government for the fee that you paid. Do you want to talk to us about that? Because there might be people listening that might be due something like that too.
Yeah, so like it's any surgery. So the cataracts, the knee replacements, all them, they're actually, the government kind of rolled out a thing online in Spain. They opened a hospital in Spain. I don't know if you've seen that. So like they'll set it up, you go over and get your surgery done and you get reimbursed the money. But it's tricky. It is tricky. And like there's so many people being aware of it now. They kind of, they're stopping it. Like you'd have to follow the correct procedures. But because I was on a public waiting list already,
I
was after doing it right, but I didn't know it even existed. So that was obviously amazing.
You can't just go to Turkey, you get it done.
Oh, it has to be in the has to be European Union.
Yeah, okay.
And then like you'd be careful what clinics, some people charge to change the paperwork into English. You've all this and that kind of. But yeah, like I think in the end of the day, people need to do their research because it's your life. You're actually playing with your life. Like,
I remember I come across this girl from, she's from the north on TikTok, and she went over to Turkey, got the nationals done. They looked amazing, but she had some issues with them. She kind of documented her. Did he?
My head. Yeah. Trying to figure out what it was.
But she got the nationals done, but the nationals now were unreal. But the pain that she was in, and then they started falling out. She couldn't eat. Of course, but I suppose the point I'm making is like, if you have a functional set of teeth that you can nurture at home with the dentist and good mouth hygiene and stuff like that, like maybe that's great. But you know, like for me, because I often talked about getting my teeth done. I wouldn't go to Turkey, you know, but I would like straighter teeth, wider teeth. I'd like to be a little bit taller and all these
things.
We're all human in the end of the day. But the thought of going over to Turkey, getting that done, and then being left with that couple of years of pain and the debt and the money and all that stuff.
You end up pumping more money into it.
It'd be very hard to come to terms with you after putting yourself in this position. Nothing wrong with you, James. This is my own head that I played it out. There was nothing wrong with your teeth, only an insecurity that you had, that you should have worked on that insecurity with somebody else rather than going to Turkey and now look at the situation.
I know. It's awful. Even like, sure,
there is bad cases where like people have bad experiences.
I had my thighs, my legs done only 8 weeks ago or 10 weeks ago. So I got a thigh lift. So I'm cut down past my knee up into the groin.
What's a thigh lift?
So it's basically all the skin. Excess skin.
Okay.
So like obviously with excess skin, I had like an overhang from like my belly. So like I was getting rashes. All that, and like especially when you get older, like, you know, elderly, like skin needs to be gone, like. And just for myself,
that's a great reason, because some people might think it might be aesthetic.
Well, I suppose I never wore a bikini until 2 years ago, the first time in my life. It's half.
Yeah, so you can get rashes and stuff underneath the dead skin and.
Under the arms, like everywhere. So like, and then with your legs, your thighs rubbing, so half it is like medical because it needs to be done. Like, I mean, who wants to kind of throw around
A
load of skin like?
Yeah.
And I am young and I'm like, I've my whole life carrying weight. And I'm like, now it's done, it's like I'm free.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, obviously I'm like, I'm more comfortable and confident in my body, but.
But as you age now and like us all.
I could probably end up with excess skin again.
I know, but we all will. And things will start to go south.
Yeah.
But you'll go south like a regular person.
Yeah.
Rather than starting off at a worse position than everybody else.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't look after that skin, where are you going to be when you're 50 and 60?
Yeah, end up, sure, you can see that. Like people working with elderly, be getting bed sores. And, you know, I'm like, you want to even avoid that. I know that's a long way away. Won't be long coming.
You're only a young woman and you want to feel as good as you can for as long as you can.
And even working out. I remember like working out. So I'm mad into the gym now and like any high intensity workouts. The skin is flapping. I can hear it.
Yeah.
Like if we're on the floor doing like anything, I can hear it, like it's.
Yeah.
And obviously, like when you are.
Have you watched more to get done?
No, I'm done now.
Done.
Well, so. Never say never, but no, I was supposed to get like a back lift and things, but you have to be realistic. You could go on and on. Like, I'll never have a perfect body, obviously, after losing that much weight, but there's.
That's a great way to think. That's a great way to think of it.
You know, I'm.
You accept that.
Yeah, so I have to, like, you have to put a limit, like.
Yeah.
Do you know, you could be going on and on, like even implants now. I was kind of humming and hawing, and then I chose not to. And sure, I've really no boobs left, but like I was like, do you know what? That's like a foreign object. And like, I just want to be at peace now, never again go under a knife. and, you know, actually start living like...
Because it could become addictive to cosmetic surgery as well.
Well, like that. I was going to get my legs done and I was like, will I, won't I?
Do you know for the next podcast 12 months time like Jordan? Yeah. You won't click that.
Stop. No, it is addictive and it's like, you know, you can change anything these days. It's so accessible. Like,
I know.
Like, so easy to hop on the plane, but you have to be so careful. There's people dying.
Yeah.
There's people losing their lives. And like that, like this surgery, my last surgery, I didn't drink for weeks beforehand. I went on holidays right the week before and I did have a few, but I gave up drink. I don't smoke, I vape. I used to stop vaping and like I literally pump myself with just good nutritious food. So I'm preparing myself.
What would you eat in an average day?
So at the moment, my maintenance calories are up around, well, when I'm active, 1900.
Yeah.
And like I wasn't doing much after the legs there, about 1300. But I'd eat more than that. Like,
what kind of a breakfast?
So in the mornings, then we kind of go for maybe just like scrambled egg, a bit of toast, or normally just Weetabix or porridge with fresh fruit. Like I had nothing out this morning because I was late before Seg College, panicking, running out the door. But I prepped my lunch last night, so I made ham sandwich with coleslaw, lettuce. Brought some chopped cucumbers, cherry tomatoes, kiwi, fruit salad.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd have a pack of potatoes in and mini biscuits. So that's what I brought today for my lunch.
What was your food dinner then?
I make everything from scratch, like at home, because I'm lactose intolerant and I have IBS. So can't control that all the time, but I make everything. I was up at my brother's house last week because they were on holidays and I ate a takeaway, I'm sure, four nights. Loonies, Luciano's, and I don't live up that side of the city no more. So I was like, I might as well take it in now and enjoy it. And I actually felt like shit. It's mad. Like, I eat like my shopping's normally the same kind of stuff. Pastas now.
Yeah. Like, yeah. But all kind of whole foods and you prepare
proper,
things yourself.
Everything, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is there anything you'd like to say to your followers, the people that have supported you over the last few years?
I suppose I just want to kind of thank everyone, really, that, you know, they kind of picked me up without even realising it, you know, I suppose egging me on. you know, the comments and the love doesn't go unnoticed. And I am very grateful because I suppose having the platform has given me a voice. You know, we only have one life and anything is possible. We all can change. But, you know, I suppose changing might seem impossible, but it doesn't happen overnight. Like I even tell people, so my son is 10 nearly. So it took me 10 years to where I am today. So that wasn't, you know, all right. Then 4 years since my surgery. And here I am now starting a whole new journey that's opened up my eyes to another adventure. And I'm like, once you keep pushing, being consistent. If you're being consistent with something, pushing in the right direction, it only becomes a habit and it creates change without you even realising it, I think, anyway.
Yeah.
And like, you know, with change, there has to be change. So whether that is your life, who you're hanging around with, if you want to change, you have to change something. And if something's not adding to your life, then, you know, you have to step away from it. And
nothing changes if nothing changes, as somebody said.
Facts, you know, and like, I suppose some people are quite happy and, you know, I don't know, some people are quite happy.
Think some people mightn't be quite happy, but they might settle.
Settle is the word. And, you know, just...
They might think that this is all they're worth, but there's more out there for them.
And there is like, and obviously losing the weight for me probably gave me that courage now to go on and actually push myself in things that I never thought I'd... Like, if you told me now 4 years ago that I'd be after doing to myself anyway in the meantime, and like what I'm doing now and what the plans for the future, I'd be like, you're having a fucking laugh.
Well, we'll have a chat when you're 42.
ADHD. Did you go down the medication route?
So I'm waiting to see a psychiatrist. So I actually paid private the Hazelton Clinic out in Douglas because they wouldn't accept me onto the public. Basically, it'd have to be like suicidal to be accepted into like St. Mary's and all the likes of it. So I was like, I started a psychology course last year in College Com through Maynooth University. And I suppose my first time in an adult setting, and I was looking around. I actually was sitting at the back of the class and I was looking at everyone and anything that moved. I was like, just pure, just not concentrating. And then I was like, nah, the more we're doing the psychology, then goes, nah, there's something wrong with me. I was like, I'm after changing. Like, I don't be out drinking and I'm not doing things that I shouldn't be doing. I'm exercising, I'm eating healthy. I'm doing everything. Why? Like, my ADHD, I suppose, looking back now, is I get very overwhelmed. I'm actually very sensitive to noises, love tunes then, but actually very sensitive to sounds. I'm like something that's driven by a motor. I'd be all going, then I crash. I literally, like on a weekend, I like to do things, but sometimes I literally come home on a Friday, I'm actually stuck to the bed. Can't actually motivate myself because my brain doesn't stop. I go to sleep, I wake up. Some nights middle of the night because I'm dreaming so much. Feel like I don't even have to be sleeping some mornings. My doctor gives me amitriptyline there every few months.
What's that?
It's like help you relax, basically. Yeah. Like it's not addictive medication. I actually don't know what it's for.
Tablet,
but I take it at night time. It does help me because sometimes I get out of routine.
Yeah.
And just helps me get into a routine. But medication, being honest, I probably will need it to get through a 4-year degree. I can't concentrate.
You know, there's, you know, above in UCC, you can connect with the Access Centre up there to help people.
Well, I'm registered now with DSS, yes. Going straight in for all the sports. That's the first thing I've done.
And there's a lot around the ADHD that you'd like support.
And I actually rang them, the mental health hub in UCC the other day, and I was like, look, I have a diagnosis, but I actually wait in the Hazelton Clinic for a psychiatrist, and they said it's been the new year, even private.
If you want the private, I'll chat to you after and I'll give you a phone number.
Right.
I'll be able to help you straight away.
Yeah, but you know what? I was like, I'll start college. You know, I have everything kind of in plan. Like, I need routine. Routine is key with me. But I was saying to my mum, like, I need to focus. I have to be retaining things. You know, it's not going to be easy doing a degree. So medication, I think I will try it. Just, I'd be interesting to see because I am very aware of myself now.
There is a long process and you have to fucking
prompt. Trying to find the right.
It takes time to find the right balance, the right medication and the right quantity of it as well.
Yeah.
It takes a lot. And it can take a year, it can take 2 years.
I've nearly finished my degree.
Because you have to understand how it works and then you have to understand how it works with your body and how it works with you. So it does take time.
Mm.
Okay. I was in UCC last year and I had to do it for a year because being diagnosed with ADHD and then going through the titration of the medication.
Yeah, it's a lot kind of.
Nearly relapsed on drugs.
So bad, like.
And I had to stop.
But that's not worth it, like when you're.
No, but it didn't end at that.
No.
I found the right doctor then to work with him.
Mm.
And we worked at my pace, changed the medication, and it worked out really well.
Yeah, like I'm following a load of people now. Like I'm kind of, I didn't even read my report yet properly because it's like trying to process it all. But like I'm following people and see what they're doing. Like I'm on ADHD Ireland. So I've actually went on a few like online Zooms with them last week. So I think I'm just going to start doing things like that just to see. But even watching other people, I was laughing. Like I was like, Jesus Christ, at least they're actually, that's just part of it. And as I said, things are making sense now.
Yeah,
he's a very good fella. And I'll finish this. He's on Instagram as well. His name is James Brown. He's a doctor. He was in Cypress Avenue 2 weeks ago.
I seen him. Yeah, Seed something. Is it Seed?
That was a Seed Talk. Oh. That's the name of the organisation. Follow him up on Instagram and he has some great ways, great techniques to help people with ADHD, how to be more organised and balanced and structured. Give it a look.
Yeah, it's mad, I suppose. But here we are, ADHD now, 31 years of age, starting UCC, and I suppose just changed my life around.
You have to get through that worst.
Yeah.
You have to get through the last 4 years. That's 10 times. In my eyes, that's harder than anything.
Yeah.
Probably going to go through it. So.
Yeah. Listen, best of luck with your course.
Thanks a million.
You'll be a great addition to the course and you'll be a great social worker down the line.
Thanks. Thanks very much for having me, lad.
Thanks, no bother. And we see everybody next week.
God bless.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.